If you love the Black Married and Debt-Free podcast, if you get any joy, if we've ever done anything for you, do us a huge favor and go and give us a 5-star review on this podcast. Leave us a comment if you like, but that helps our viewership ranking. Peace. What's going on, everybody? This is Marcus, Black Married Debt-Free, and I'm excited about today's episode because I'm going to be sharing with you an interview that I had on a podcast with a real estate legend, really, Coach Carson, Chad Carson, the Coach Carson podcast. I was able to be on there and share not only my and Shira's real estate story, but also some of the steps that we took to acquire our 4 properties that we've acquired so far. So I think you're going to get a lot out of this podcast. So sit back, enjoy, and get your pen, your paper, and your popcorn ready because it's going to be a good one. Here we go.
Hey, Marcus, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, thank you for having me, Chad. I appreciate it, man.
Yeah, it's great. I've been looking forward to this interview and just paying attention to everything you and your wife got going on with the Black Married and Debt-Free podcast and your YouTube channel. Been really impressed with that. So I thought it'd be fun, Marcus, if we could, you know, I want to talk about your real estate investing, what y'all have done buying out of town, out of state rental properties all the way from California to other parts of the country. But I thought it'd be really cool just to start with your personal story, you know, some of your personal finance, because the, you know, right off the bat, if you visit your site, it talks about how you've paid off, you and your wife have paid off a lot of debt, and kind of where did that come about? Like, where did y'all start deciding to start attacking that debt and paying off debt and kind of getting things together?
Well, yeah, Chad, me and my wife, we got married fairly young, married at 21. And, you know, we were, like my wife likes to say, we each had our own debt, and then we came together and we created debt together. You know, some of the debt that your average Americans have, student loan, car loan, and then we ended up buying a home together. And so, you know, that just accumulated over time. And for me, you know, no one in my family ever, you know, was you know, extremely financially savvy or anything like that. It was just, you work hard, you pay your bills, and kind of that was the philosophy that I brought into the marriage. Hey, we're making all of our minimum payments. We have a car, we have a roof over our head. Hey, I'm winning here.
Yeah.
But you know, after having our son, I was kind of burning the candle on both ends. I was working 2 full-time jobs, and I just couldn't do it anymore. And you know, my philosophy was always, I'll just get another job. I'll just get something else to help, you know, pay the bills. And it was at this point when I realized, we have more month than we have money. My wife couldn't work. And so I was, you know, at a crossroads where we were in, we live in Northern California, very, you know, expensive state. But we were making $1,300 a month household. And that was just not enough to pay for our lifestyle. And so it was then when I had to kind of put down that ego, that male ego, you know, if I can do it, I can work my way out of it. And I partnered with my wife and I said, hey, you know, this is where we're at. Could we put our heads together and figure out a way to climb ourselves out of this hole? Mm-hmm. So that looked like me getting a better high paying job. It looked like her shortly after maternity leave, getting back into the workforce. And so we quickly put ourselves in a better position. We were earning more money, but then we said, okay, we don't want to be here again. And so we began in 2015 to start the debt payoff process where we were going to pay off all of our debt. And in 2017, we were actually able to do that. We paid off $110,000 of debt, not including the interest. And that was kind of the beginning of our wealth building journey, which we were using real estate now to do that. So that's a bit of background.
Yeah. A couple of things I wanted to ask about there. Like one was just the psychology of, you know, there's this mentality a lot of us have. Like if you work hard, you go do a job, you take care of things. Like in a lot of ways, that is better than average for a lot of people, right? I mean, that's what you were doing was like not unlike a lot of what a lot of us do. But so I guess it was, you know, having the family, realizing that, hey, this thing is going to get too much for me. Did you have like one moment, or was it just kind of creeping up on you, or like what was the kind of thought? Was it just that stress of just knowing it was out there?
Yeah, Chad, it was just that slow building stress. And it's like the idea of when your car is needs maintenance and you're hearing something and you just turn the radio up, you know, you don't want to hear it, you know? So that was me. It was a slow kind of build up until I was like, okay, this thing needs to be confronted head on. Yeah. And, you know, that's kind of how it was for me. And like how you said, like, you know, my family, it was always work hard, and the deepest financial literacy we got was save money. It was never invest. It was never anything like that. So all this was foreign to me at the time, and same with my wife. And so we had to kind of develop that muscle outside of, you know, our upbringing, you know, learning about investing and making your money work for you.
Were there any mentors or books or anything you that kind of gave you some of that financial literacy that you wanted right off the bat?
Oh yeah, man. While we were going through our debt payoff process, we were kind of tapping into some of the financial gurus. One book that my wife and I'm sure a lot of probably your guests have talked about, Rich Dad, Poor Dad. That was kind of the first one that it's like, whoa, this is like enlightens you, you know. It's not so much strategy, but more mindset, you know. We started reading Napoleon Hill's Think and Grow Rich. That was another eye opener. So it was just kind of slowly learning, like, man, this is a whole new world that we never really knew existed. And it really got our mindset ready for, you know, the wealth building side of it.
Yeah, I'm always amazed, whether it's entrepreneurship or personal finance, like how much the mechanical part is paying your debt off, but then how much compounding goes on in your head, like just how much learning goes on. And, you know, you're simultaneously like getting better yourself and you're growing. And I mean, it's a good feeling. I just think that's a fun part of the process, too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I totally agree with that. You know, just the learning, and it's like a whole new beginning for you, you know. So that was definitely our story for sure.
Cool. Well, let's talk about the mechanics. So, like, I mean, there's going to be people there's lots of debt out there, and people are trying, whether it's your real estate debt or whether it's, you know, you guys paid off your house in addition to student debt and other stuff. So what are some of the mechanics of just getting out of that hole? Like, was it, you mentioned getting a, you know, higher paying job. Was there anything else y'all did just kind of that helped you get some traction at that stage?
Yeah, for sure. It's funny because when we were paying off our debt, we didn't really know what we were doing. We were kind of freestyling it, you know? And then it was later on when we were able to do it, we went back and said, well, man, what did we do? You know, could we put that into bite-sized pieces? So we've been able to do that. The first thing we did was we took inventory, financial inventory, right? We said, let's go back and look at what we're spending money on. Let's see what's going out and what's coming in. And a lot of times when people do that, that's really all you need, you know, to say, oh, wow, I'm spending this much on, you know, coffee, or I'm spending this much on this entertainment piece. Wow, I can really cut that back. And then when you do that, you realize we actually have more wiggle room than I thought. You don't have that much further to go, you know, on the income increase side. So that was the first thing we did. Then we said, okay, how could we see where we can cut back. Now let's see where we can increase our money. And that's when it came time for me to seek other employment and for my wife to get back into the workforce. So doing those two things really helps you tremendously. Then when it comes to paying off the debt, we researched a few strategies, one of which is when you may take the highest interest, you know, debt and pay that down first. Or there's another strategy where you pay off the smallest debt and kind of snowball. It's called snowball. And so we thought that would be best for us because we were able to celebrate those little milestones. We were really big on, you know, celebrating goals and checking, all right, we're done with that one. And so that's a quick way to get that dopamine hit. Okay, I paid off this $500 credit card. Ooh, I could do this.
Yeah.
And then we just kind of snowballed it up. So that was pretty much our strategy of paying off the debt.
Yeah, I like how you mentioned there's different approaches, you know, paying off the highest interest. If you're like the spreadsheet nerd, you know, like, all right, that's the way that's going to save you the most money. But like, I'm with you, like psychology is so big in investing and paying off debt, like getting that win, especially when it's, you know, you're working with a partner or a couple, you know, it's like, man, that being able to like confirm that this thing works a little bit, you're making progress, almost like you're climbing a mountain and you got to like, all right, let's take a little rest here. Let's celebrate. Let's enjoy the process. So, yeah. All right. So you kind of got awareness, you know, what's going out, you start increasing income, you know, your wife goes back to work. I remember reading in your podcast, y'all talk a lot about side hustles. Can you talk a little bit about that? Just maybe if somebody has a limit on what they're making at their job, maybe are there other ways to kind of expand that income without just making more money at the first job you're at?
For sure, Chad. You know, I used to be embarrassed about this, man, but the further I get along in like the influencer space and just sharing my story, I wear this, man. I'm a high school graduate. I'm not a college graduate. So for me, I've always been a serial hustler. Like, that's always been easy for me. And so that really helped during this process. And side hustles was a thing that I took too easily. I'm a musician, a self-taught musician. I grew up playing in church. And so I was able to take just that skill and create different revenue streams, you know, selling music online, playing for different plays in my city and different events and gigs in my city. And all those, you know, the money that I was able to generate doing those things, we would throw that at the debt. You know, just finding unique ways to use whatever gift, whatever talent you have to create revenue. You know, podcasting, we started doing that. And, you know, YouTube and different things like that was, you know, able to generate money so we could have more money to throw at our debt. And so, yeah, I'm big on side hustles. You know, not everyone could just be a high income earner. You know, we're decent, solid earners. But with me in particular, you know, high school diploma, there's kind of a cap, right? So that's when the, you know, side hustles really came in for myself, and it helped tremendously.
Love it. Yeah, and side hustles to me, once you become that entrepreneur, and side hustle is just starting your own business, it's kind of like it's almost like you get addicted to it, right? I don't know, that's just my experience. You make a little bit of money, you're like, all right, I just made $200 on the side gig doing this thing for, you know, a few hours, and then you're like, all right, what else can I do? Your creativity starts just running. I mean, there's so many opportunities when you start studying people like you who've done the side hustles, and other people talk about that. I mean, there's just so many ways, and some of them are small money, but some of them can grow into it. Like your podcasting gig, I do a podcast too. I mean, that can start small, and then if you want to scale with it and go big with it, I mean, it's got potential, right?
Absolutely. And it's like you said, a lot of times a side hustle will spawn into a full-fledged business, and then you're like, wow, I'm able to do this full time, you know? So it starts to grow. So that's a great point.
All right. So setting the stage here, you've kind of got this awareness, the stress early on, you start getting aware of what's going out, you start getting some more money coming in, and you start paying off debt. So you got this thing rolling. One thing I'm curious about, this is one of those debates online, you know, paying off credit card debt, paying off your student debt, that I think a lot of people get around that. But then, you know, paying off your home is like an emotional topic, right? People are like, no, you can't do that. That doesn't make sense. I'll tell everybody, my wife and I paid our home off too, and it felt really good for us to do it. And I'm glad we did it. But I'm curious for you, like y'all took the interesting approach that you start paying your home off first, and then you got into real estate investing and start investing in other stuff. So I'm just curious, what kind of conversation did y'all have about that? Why was that your decision to do that first?
Well, here's the thing, Chad. So we bought our home. It's a 3-bedroom, 3-bath condo in Northern California. We got it in 2009 for $86,000. Yep. So we saw that. And at this point, it's 2015, 2016. And the house is worth, a little over $200,000. And so we're looking at this, we're like, why would we not? We know we got this smash deal during the recession. We know the economy has turned around and now things are going up. We thought, why would we not take advantage of this? Like, pay this thing off, you know? And so we said, there's no way we're gonna, you know, pay this for 30 years. Let's go ahead and knock this thing out. And so that was a big reason for us wanting to pay off our home, because it was just, we had got such a good deal and we wanted to take advantage of it. And so that's what we did. We were able to just kind of keep trucking along. Like you said, we paid off one thing and you get that student loan paid off, you know, for $30,000. You're like, wow, we could just keep going. And the momentum had begun to move so quickly that we just went at the house and attacked that too. But yeah, like you said, it's highly debated. You know, should you pay off your home? You know, should you not? But for us, we just saw it as a great opportunity. And then we'll get into later how we use that to spawn our real estate endeavors.
Yeah, I mean, let's go there, because I think, you know, people have to make their own decision about the house. And you had the situation where obviously the house has gone up a lot in value. Relatively your debt was, you know, less than half of what the house is worth. So that makes a lot of sense to me. The cool thing y'all did, and this is, I want to dig into this, because, you know, when people are starting real estate, or any business really, but real estate in particular, getting that cash for your first deal is always tricky, right? You know, it's all, how do you get that money for the down payment? And so the approach y'all took was, you got this condo, you paid it off, it's worth over $200,000. Let's go get a home equity line of credit. Some people call that a HELOC, and use that. So maybe kind of walk me through, like, when did you realize that was a thing, something you could do to try to, and did you initially think that was going to help you start in real estate, or did y'all just go ahead and get the HELOC just because?
Yeah, so during our debt payoff process, my thinking was, we're going to pay off this debt, we're going to have all this available money now to invest. And we weren't heavy investors during the payoff process, because we really wanted to attack it. And so I knew we had some ground to make up. So my mentality was, we're going to go all, you know, index funds, ETFs, and we're just going to do that. And my wife started checking out Bigger Pockets and some other platforms, you know, and it started saying, hey, there's people that are, you know, using real estate to speed up their retirement and to invest. And I was like, I wasn't a huge fan at first. I'm going to be honest with you, Chad, because that hustler mentality, again, I'm looking at some of the cash flow numbers on, you know, mortgaging a property and then renting it out. And I'm like, okay, $200-$300, you know, that's looked upon as a good, you know, solid deal. I was like, I can make that doing X, Y, Z. Then my wife said, but Marcus, that's passive. And then that's when that started. It's like, And so we knew this is something we wanted to do. Even when we were paying off our debt, we started doing research and we knew, okay, we're going to go do real estate. And so when we thought about how we were going to come up with the money for the first buy and hold, which was going to be our strategy, we said, wow, we're going to have all this equity in this California home. But what about tapping into some of that? So then that's when we began researching, you know, cash out refi or home equity line of credit. And the home equity line of credit just fit our personality, because you're opening a line of credit that uses your home as leverage, and you can get as much out as you need, you know, and then put it back and you know, or take it all out and do this. So it was just, it seemed like your home was now the bank. And I said, you know what, I kind of like how that feels. And so we knew we wanted to buy and hold, but we knew our area, probably the returns wouldn't be good. So let's look out of state, you know, where the returns are a bit better, and we could buy a home cash and come to the table with more, you know, bargaining power, because hey, we're this is a cash offer, you know, we close a little quicker. And so we thought, you know, that felt good. And so that's why we decided to go that route.
So I want to go into the real estate stuff, but I want to go back to this idea of paying your home off. To me, if you're still in a growth phase, like, you know, a lot of people are, like, it's a good compromise, right? Like, you get your home paid off, but you have this line of credit that you may not use, and you can just sit there and not use it if you don't find a good deal, but that you put all that money, like you said, into a bank. You're like, the bank is your property. You pay that debt off, and then you get the home equity line of credit, which means you can access all that money you just paid the house off with or more. But now it's, you know, you're leveraging, there's some risks there and there's some things that can go wrong, which I know y'all probably looked at as well, but it's like that gives you that tool, especially on those first deal or two, where you got, how are you going to use that money? And that home equity is a kind of an untapped source. It's just sitting there, not being used unless you use a tool like this, right?
Yeah, exactly, Chad. And the thing of it is like, I'm sure there's a more eloquent way to phrase this, but to me, it was like magic. It was like this home just gained money. I mean, like you said, we didn't even we bought the house for $86,000. It was worth about $230,000 at this time, and we got a line of credit for $125,000. Well, that $125,000 had nothing to do with me. You know, the market just created that for me, and so I looked at it like wow, you know, this is like a miracle, you know.
Yeah.
And I know there's probably a better way to phrase that, but that's how I looked at it at the time. You know, like, hey, I'm gonna take advantage of this.
Yeah, I mean, really any real estate you own, I mean, y'all timed it well. Like, what, you know, sometimes you get lucky, sometimes you don't. I had some that I got lucky on. I had some that I timed it wrong. You know, I bought 2007 and then they went down right after. So, but like, you took advantage of the thing that you did. And And so you got this money available. You know you're interested in real estate. Like, talk to me. So you started looking out of state because you're in Northern California. We all know kind of prices, even, you know, Sacramento, San Francisco, like prices are pretty high. So even 125 grand, maybe that gets you a down payment somewhere. But the cat, you know, your side hustle, you want to look for that cash flow, and that really is not there in California. So how did y'all start looking around the country? Where did you decide to start looking for a market to buy your rental?
Man, it's really funny because when we tell the story, it was like we referenced the movie Coming to America when Hakeem, you know, was trying to figure out where he wanted to go. He just spun the globe and pointed. That's kind of how we did it, man. It was just like, what about this? What about this? So we knew the South would be, you know, have better return on investment for us. So we looked at Georgia, and then we looked at, I had a friend that lived in Tennessee. We looked there, and we would just run the numbers, man. We would just kind of use the 1% rule as a point of reference, you know, to see, would this be a good area? Would that be a good area? If we buy a house for $100,000, you know, can we get $1,000 rent there? You know, I kind of use that as like a rough blueprint. And I had a friend that was moving from Tennessee, which I was looking there, and he said, no, I'm moving to Charlotte. So I said, Charlotte, okay. Let me see what's going on there. Cause just having someone there put me a little bit at ease, like, hey, if I needed him to go look at the house or whatever. And so I started looking in Charlotte. I was like, Charlotte's good, but this is around 2018. And Charlotte had just really kicked up, you know, and the prices were a little out of our range. And so I said, well, what's near Charlotte? And we looked at Greensboro. And I said, Greensboro, huh? The return on investment was a lot better there. And so we just said, yo, let's just do Greensboro. Let's just try it. And so started cold calling real estate agents and doing that whole thing. And what I realized is that if you get a good, you need, I call it your core four. Financing, we already had that. You need a good agent. If you're going to do out of state, you're going to need property management if you're going to go that route, and you're going to need a contractor. If you find one superstar out of that bunch, you know, they'll have access to those other ones. And so I was like, cool. We found an agent that was really good, and he seemed to have built relationships with, I know, a good property manager. That property manager knows a contractor. So we felt at peace. And, you know, connecting with that real estate agent, he was able to do everything virtual walkthroughs, and you know, we felt like we were there, and we felt like we had a good investment, so we just pulled the trigger.
Nice. Lots of smart stuff there. I want to highlight, but the part about spinning the globe and just like, you know, looking at a spot, like, you know, some people kind of laugh at that, but you know, it's true. Like, you know, when I'm helping people try to figure an out of state market, a lot of times I'm like, well, where are you from? Like, do you have a city you used to go to, or did you go to school somewhere? Do you have family somewhere? If you don't, though, I mean, it really is. It's just like, all right, here's this region of the country has better price to rent ratios for investors, usually the Southeast or the Midwest. Yep. And then, you know, you just look for, you know, North Carolina in general is a good economic state. You can just read a few reports online showing that, you know, the population is moving there, jobs are pretty good there. And then, you know, but then you were using smart math too. You were looking at the numbers and kind of saying, all right, what if this, what if that? So it's just a combination of spinning the globe to start, but then you looked at the geography, you looked at the demographics, and then you looked at the numbers. But then I want to go to your team stuff, because that was going to be my next question. You know, that core four, that financing, you said real estate agent, property manager, and then contractor.
Yeah.
So you got to have all four of those. Everybody who gets into real estate knows that. But what sound like really smart that you did, you start with one. Like, find one dream team member who you really like, and then they're going to know and connect you with everybody else. They got the contractor, they got the closing attorney, probably got the good find, because a real estate agent doesn't want to send you to a mortgage broker who doesn't close the loans, right? They only want somebody who's going to be, you know, a good refi person. So that you started with that agent, and how long did that process take from the time you like cold call this person to the time you're actually looking at properties and making offers?
Well, you know what, Chad, at first I had no idea how to go about it. I just thought I need an agent first, right? That was my thinking. And so started cold calling agents, and the thing that I found was, like, when you're coming from California and you're trying to invest in some of these smaller southern states, I had to kiss a few, you know, frogs before I found the princess, because you know, a lot of people didn't take me serious. You know, do you know what you're doing? You know, it was a lot of that kind of pushback. And so I went through a few agents. There was one lady, I was like, hey, telling my wife, I just need an agent. I just need boots on the ground. And my wife was like, I don't know, some bad vibe about her. So we ended up going with somebody else. So the gentleman we ended up landing on, it was on a house that I saw on Zillow that I thought this house is perfect. And I just called the real estate agent on the Zillow, you know? And then this gentleman, he knew things that I didn't know I needed to know at the time. Now, in retrospect, I know you need to get your core four. But at the time, I was just starting with the piece I thought I should start with. Yeah. So he had access to the property manager, multiple property managers. And so I was able to kind of vet each one and, okay, this one's better. And then this property manager had their own general contractor. You know, if you find a house that needs work, we can do that for you. We can oversee that for you. I'm like, wow, okay. And like you said, the real estate agent also had a closing attorney that they worked closely with. I learned it's better to go with their person than come with your own a lot of times. Mm-hmm. A lot of times it streamlines things. So it was something that I learned by just really lucking up and calling a superstar agent. You know, he was able to help me with the other things. And then going forward, I knew that's what I need to look for, you know, so.
So in terms of screening who you use, you kind of recognize this person has a knowledge that you didn't have. And, you know, your wife kind of recognizes somebody else. They're just a bad gut feeling, which I always talk to my wife about, all of our team members as well. She usually sees things that I don't see. And maybe other people have that same experience. Was there anything else that you, like, were there any other questions you asked? Was there anything else, like, did you ask for references? Or was it just like, all right, I got, this guy feels pretty good. He knows his stuff. Like, I'm just for other people who are trying to build their team, are there other things you've either learned then or since then that you should be asking or looking for with your team members out of state particularly?
Oh, yeah. As far as agent, one thing I learned is you want someone who's hungry, right? And you want someone who treats you like you're their main person they're working with at the time. Now, we know agents, a lot of times, man, these agents, they're notaries on the side, they got this on the side, and like agents is just part of what they do.
They side hustle wanna, just like all of us, right?
Exactly. but you want them to make you feel like, man, they, like I'm their number one right now, you know? And I think that's key, because I've dealt with agents where you feel like, man, you're just one more thing that they have to do. And you don't want that. You want someone who's going to be able to communicate effectively, you know, via all mediums, email, text, call. You want someone who's just available for any questions you may have. And so that's with the agent side, someone who's hungry. And with your property management, it's the same thing. You want someone who's there to answer questions, someone who can, has a good track record of fixing tenant issues. You want someone who's going to take care of your tenant, because you don't want to be switching tenants, you know? And so these are things that I've learned, you know, throughout the past few years that are key, you know? So you definitely want to make sure you're vetting them and think of your real estate like a business. You know, you're hiring these people. These people work for you. And so just like you can hire them, if they're not doing well, you can fire them. And so don't think like I have to take whatever they give, because you want to be sure that you're providing quality to your tenants.
Especially when you're new, like I totally get what you were talking about. When you first start, like sometimes you don't even know the questions to ask. And some people don't treat you with respect, like, hey, you're a new investor. But you know, at the same time, like, you had $125,000, like it's their loss. Even if you're new, if that person doesn't give you attention, and it might just be they're busy, it might be they have other things going on, you don't know. But like, I think it's pretty common that as a new investor, getting that relationship on that first one isn't always easy. Yeah. And sometimes you got to pretend before you get there, right? You got to but that's where knowledge comes in. Y'all studied Bigger Pockets, you're reading books, you're reading Napoleon Hill, you're improving yourself. So that first, you got to kind of know your stuff before you even do it sometimes by studying it, watching YouTube, listening to podcasts, and doing it that way.
Very true. Very true. And one thing I learned, Chad, along with that is like, you just learn as you go, you know? And when it came to the next, you know, second, third, fourth deal, you've learned so much, you know, that you didn't know on the first one. So you're totally right about that.
Let's talk about that first one. I always like to get into the details, if you don't mind, just kind of some of the numbers. Like, tell me about the property in Greensboro. What did it, you know, what type of property was it? And maybe just some of the basic numbers that y'all found.
Okay. So we were looking for like a C+, B- neighborhood. We were looking in the $100,000 range. and we were looking for a single family, 3-bed, 2-baths. We just want to keep it real simple, you know, for the first deal, something that we knew with cash flow. So in this area, and for this type of home, you know, $100,000 home, we saw we could collect $1,000, maybe $1,100 rent. And the a good thing I like to tell people, a way to determine your rent, because sometimes that's hard to do. You have some of these rent, you know, estimate sites, but we like to look at the fair market housing for that area. So there, you know, Section 8 has a kind of estimate of, you know, 3-bed, 3-baths for each area of the country. Then you could go on some of these government sites and see, okay, this area, this type of home can bring in around this much rent. So we like to use that as a barometer. And so this type of home could bring in, $1,000 to $1,100. So we said, that'll be good. You know, that'll be a good start for us number-wise. And so we wanted to find a home that was move-in ready. We didn't want to do anything to it because we're newbies. Yep. This is 3,000 miles away. And so we said, hey, we do, you know, the number-wise, this might not, as long as it comes out, we're cash-flowing, let's go ahead and pull the trigger because we want to get our feet wet in this thing. And so that was our mindset. So we were able to, this house was asking for 110 and we offered 103 and they accepted it. And, we closed in 14 days and we went down there and I'm thinking we're going to sign all these papers like, you know, we did when we bought our primary residence. But little did I know, we buy a house cash. Hey,
totally different, man. Totally different.
Two papers in and out.
It's kind of, I mean, it's good, but it's also kind of a little scary too. When you're first, you're like, wait a minute. Like, you know,
right.
They just gave me this house after 2 minutes. Like what is this?
Exactly. Oh yeah. Nice. It worked out well for us. We immediately, you know, after getting the keys, we took a look at the house. Oh man, this is it. This is it. And then left there connected with our property manager. Gave her the keys and they listed the property soon after because, like I said, it was moving ready. So that was a big bonus for us. We were able to get it listed quick, get a tenant in there quick, and the rest was history.
Nice. I want to go back to, there's a place that a lot of people stumble on, especially on the first one, where that the point between when you evaluate the deal and you say, all right, there's a deal here, I'm going to make an offer on this, and the time you actually close on it. You know, that period where you did you have anybody help you look at it? Because you're long distance. You're like doing this thing without even looking at it. Like, how did you get the confidence to know it is turnkey and there's not something hidden behind the scenes that I'm not seeing? Like, did you have anybody help you look at it at that point?
You know, Chad, we were going solely on the word of our agent. Now, our agent would do virtual walkthroughs. They would record video to get even better quality footage. They would send us the video. So we trusted his word. And the thing that I liked about our agent is he would tell me when things weren't good. And I thought, man, he doesn't even really have to do that because I didn't see that. You know, there was one property we looked at and there was a train. It was a wonderful property, but there was an active train track that went behind him. And we would have never known that, you know. And he said, hey, guys, there's an active train track here. I don't know if this would be a good deal, you know. So I'm like, man. So I trusted him. You know, I felt good about him. So I went solely on that. I didn't really have boots on the ground or anything, anyone to vet or double check his work, which may be a little naive, but for us, I trusted his word and he was really thorough. So that helped ease some of the stress with us.
Yeah. Yeah. Good. Going back to that relationship, this is a team business and ultimately you're going to have to trust somebody. I mean, you can't, especially when you're long distance, you can't do it all yourself. So this is your guy. You trust him. He's demonstrated that he's trustworthy in other experiences with the deals you didn't do.
Yeah.
And so you pull the trigger. On any deal since then, have you ever done a physical like property inspection, paid a third party to do that or anything like that as well?
Thank you, Chad. I totally forgot about that. We did have a property inspector. So we had a due diligence period where we had a property inspector come in and check out things too. So that put us at ease too. We've done that with every property we've purchased. Thank you for reminding me of that. So that helps, you know, to confirm what your agent is seeing and telling you. Because a lot of times your agent, they can't really get into the weeds of things. They can't go into the crawl space and into the attic and see what's there. So I do recommend using that due diligence period to get an inspector in there. And, you know, it's fairly inexpensive, man. But it pays in dividends, you know. you know, if it's a good deal or if it's, hey, now we need to go back to the table and say, hey, just lower that price. You know, it just helps so much to see really what the house needs and how everything is.
No doubt. I agree. 100%. I mean, I've at this point bought hundreds of properties and I still hire a third party inspector to go look at it. I mean, I've crawled around crawl spaces. I can make a pretty good punch list, but man, it's almost like an insurance policy. It's not, The more information you can get when you're buying a property, this is a big investment, right? I mean, there's no reason not to have spent $300, $500, whatever the cost is. And they give you, they give you a nice list. They get pictures of everything. And it's, they're just going to give you red flags. And, the way you describe this, Marcus, is like your real estate agent, if they're a good real estate agent, they should be able to tell you about the neighborhood, about anything that's going to affect the marketability of the property. They should be able to tell you cosmetically, like, ooh, that kitchen's nasty. We got to change this thing. Your tenants aren't going to like that. Or this carpet's horrible. Like, they'll tell you the cosmetic stuff and the market stuff. And then the physical inspector is going to go under there and say, right, you got termite damage and all these sills under this house. That's going to cost, $10,000 to fix that. So between those two, that's a pretty good 1-2, due diligence period.
Absolutely. I totally agree. And like you said, it's just those little things that you won't be able to see. I remember on the first house, there was no gutter on a portion of the house. And my agent brought it to my attention. And then the inspector confirmed, yeah, you might want to get a gutter here because you'll see water damage, that will be done, over time. And I was like, okay, well, good. And we were able to, get with the contractor and get that put on the house at the cost, at the seller's cost. So little things like that, man, is really key.
Nice. Cool. So you got this deal, it's under your belt, you've closed on it, you turned the key over to the property manager. How long did it take from the time y'all bought it? This turnkey, so was it rented pretty quickly? Did it take a while? What was that process like?
Yeah, man, this one rented pretty quickly. It was about 2 to 3 weeks. And so I like to say, the first deal went so smooth that it made me, it made us excited and put my wife at ease about doing this again and again. Had it been like one of those horror stories, I don't know, but we wanted to set ourselves up to where, turnkey, good neighborhood, rent, we thought that this would rent quickly and it did. So we actually kind of lucked up on that one. Sometimes you may sacrifice a little ROI, return on investment, when you're trying to really set it up and have as least hiccups as possible. You may sacrifice some of that return, but we thought it was a good idea for the first part.
No doubt about it. All right. So you got some cash flow coming in because y'all still you have this line of credit on your house. So I assume 30 days later, you have to pay interest on that $100,000 you put into it. What did y'all do from the cash standpoint, financing standpoint? I'm assuming you maybe they refinanced or did something with that money so you could use it again. But tell me how that process worked.
Yeah, it's real interesting, Chad. We really were like, okay, so what's next for us? So what we did for the next year, I would say, no, I'm sorry, not even the next year. We did this for about the next 6 to 8 months. We were just taking the cash flow and the mortgage or the cash flow from the rent, and we would pay it, the mortgage, and put the extra cash flow also on the mortgage to pay it down. We were just kind of paying it down. And luckily we got a loan for $125,000. We only spent about $103,000, $104,000. And so we had $20,000 to play with. And so our thought was, let's just get another one. Let's get another one. But this time let's use the, $20,000 or so on to get a conventional loan. So at this point we were just about acquisition. We weren't really trying to pay the HELOC down all the way. We just wanted to, do acquisitions and get another one. Looking back and redoing more research, we may have just used that initial disbursement, not to buy a whole house, but to do a down payment on conventional loan. Maybe we could have did that, took that $100,000 and got five, homes. But we were still green. So for the second house, we decided we're just going to use the $20,000 that's left on our home equity line of credit and get a conventional loan. And so that was what we did for our second home.
Nice. Was that also in Greensboro? So did you use the same team you already had in place to go find the next one?
Yeah, same team, same type of home, same, all the numbers were almost identical. Now, the one thing that was different was this home was a 3-bed, 1-bath, which it took a month or so to rent out, because, you know, your average family, you know, with two kids or so, or a kid, you know, is going to want two bathrooms. So that's something that we learned, you know, kind of bank butting our head against the wall there. So it took a little longer, but it still cash flowed, and it was a very similar transaction to the first one, except that we did a conventional loan.
So that's impressive. I mean, I'm just thinking back from the time you started, when you had that stressful moment, you're paying debt off, you get the debt paid off, you get the HELOC, you go across the country 3,000 miles, you buy two properties. I mean, so what were the conversations like between you and your wife at that point? Was it like, that's enough? This is, I mean, because y'all, at that point, you started 2015 or forget when it was, maybe even 2009 when you were starting to pay stuff off. But now here you are, 2016 or whatever it is. So, I mean, are you wanting more? Or you want to do more? Or are y'all kind of like, what was your conversation like at that point?
Yeah, at that point, Chad, I'm all in. You know, I'm like, hey, let's do this. I see it works. You know, I'm like, let's do this. And one thing, Chad, I'd love to pick your brain more off air, but
sure.
One thing that I found out quickly is like one or two properties, that's great. But when you start to scale, that's when you start to see that, you know, you need to scale this thing. And so I'm thinking, man, we got it. Let's keep this thing going, you know? And so that was my mentality. My wife is she's more of a security seeker, you know? So she's like, okay, let's maybe one or two a year. I'm like, man, let's figure out a way to do, you know, let's just keep this thing going. So we had to kind of find a happy medium. So we took we were really excited, you know, at that point, but we took a couple years off and just started stacking and saving and stacking and saving. We sold our primary residence, purchased a new forever home that we, you know, okay, we have two kids now. So we purchased a home, another primary residence. But what that did was that transaction paid off the line of credit, which in turn made our first investment, we owned it free and clear. And what we realized is that Greensboro prices have shot up. So fast forward to 2020, we're priced out of Greensboro now. You know, it's good and bad. Good because now those homes have gained equity. One is paid off. So we're like ready to get back into the real estate investment game. And now we're looking at another place in the South, you know. So that's kind of where we were to start. End of 2020 and start 2021.
Nice. Yeah, I love that conversation you had, the security versus the, you know, let's go do this thing. My wife and I've had similar conversations, and I'm glad she's won on some of these, like paying our house off, for example. We had a 3% loan, and she's like, nah, wouldn't it be great to just not have a payment, not have to worry about that? And I'm like, ah, oh, but 3%, we can make at least 6-7% anywhere, easy, you know? And right. I was trying to run the math on it. She's like, nah, but, you know, wouldn't that be nice? And finally, she won out on that one. I'm glad. But I find it really good, whether you have a spouse or whether you have a business partner. Like, I just think that tug of war back and forth is healthy. You know, that's a good, it's kept me honest. I hope, you know, I think we both kind of have that dynamic where we each kind of learn from each other. So yeah. I think it sounds like that's the kind of dynamic you had too, all along. I mean, whether it was the debt payoff or the invest in real estate, that communication with you and your spouse is really a big deal.
It's big. And that's like really what our whole, that's a big part of what our foundation is, you know, yin and yang. You know, sometimes this person wants to do this, and you always need that yang to kind of balance each other out. And me and my wife, we found a good synergy on, you know, balancing each other out. It's really helped us, you know, in this wealth pursuit for sure.
So one more question about that. Like, so I get this question sometimes from people, and I don't always have a good answer. So feel free to punt on this one, but it's like, you get some people who say like, they're all in on this real estate thing. They kind of like, you know, we're talking about, you're excited, you're ready to go. They're like, but how do you get your spouse on board to do this with me? And they got this reluctant spouse for whatever reason. There's probably details behind the scene. Like, do you ever run into that? Do you got any thoughts for people who are kind of in that stage where they're, one person's kind of gung ho, ready to go, the other person's reluctant to do it?
Yeah, yeah, we get that a lot, man, on our platform, that question. And what we always like to tell people is, you know, be consistent on your own, be consistent in your conversations. You know, if you bring it to your spouse, hey, I really want to do this. You know, this is my idea. And they're like not really interested in hearing that. Maybe circle back later at a better time, you know, and that shows that you're serious. A lot of times you bring up something, your wife or your spouse is like, no, I don't think this is a good idea. Then you just forget about it. Like, well, you wasn't serious about it anyway. You know, I see that a lot. Also, finding your speaking your partner's language, I think is key too. So, like I said, my wife's a security seeker. Just me finding that out and figuring that out, I'm able to approach her differently with ideas because I know she wants to, I have to lay it out for her. You know, if you don't know your partner's language, money mindset, it's kind of hard to come up with ideas. You may see more friction. Whereas if you know, okay, they like this. Okay, let me write out a spreadsheet for her on this. In my head, it makes sense just being in my mind. But for my partner, they need to see it on paper. So it's just different things like that has helped, you know, us.
Yeah, it requires listening. I mean, imagine that in a relationship, right? Before you get your agenda across, you got to listen to the other person and say, hey, what are they trying to accomplish here?
Yeah,
that's really good. All right, so I want to fast forward a little bit. So you've got these two properties. You took some time off. You're saving. You got your personal residence now, and so that's by selling the condo and then buying that. You had some equity above and beyond what your loan was to go buy that other property, and then you've got this free and clear rental, and then another one that has a loan on it. And so where did y'all go from there? Because obviously now you've got, I guess, four properties as of the time we're recording this. Like, where did you decide to go from there?
Well, you know, it was tough, Chad, because our philosophy was like, you know, black married and debt free, you know, that's our thing and paying off. And, but it was something happened when we bought that second house. You know, my wife looked around the house, she said, this is nice. And at this point, our mentality was, we're going to pay these off. And my wife looked around, she said, this is nice, but the renter's going to pay this one off. And then we both looked at each other and I was like, you know what? I like that. You know what I mean? Yeah. So we kind of shrugged that whole, we have to pay off everything and no mortgages and no this. We kind of shrugged that off and said, let's be smart about this thing. Let's let that renter pay this off, you know? So going forward, we knew we're going to just get loans and the return, we're going to make sure that the return is good and sufficient. And we're going to just keep turning this thing around and using the cash flow to buy more properties. And so that was our mindset going into our third property. And I had listened to a podcast, I forget where it was, but it was a gentleman who talked about how he invested in Montgomery, Alabama. And I was like, And so I began to do research in that area, just like I did in Greensboro. And I realized, wow, the taxes were low, you know, different things. The return on investment was good. It's not a high equity area where the homes don't really gain value, but the cash, it was a good cash flow. I was like, you know what? Let's try there. And so we began to run numbers and do that. And in 2021, we took, literally copied and pasted our same strategy for buying our first house, contacting the agent, vetting the agent, and the agent knows property manager, and the property manager knows. We literally copied and pasted that procedure and did the same thing in Montgomery. We bought our first house in March of 2021 in Montgomery, which is house number, Vesta property number 3. And then we rinsed and repeat and did it again in July. And so we've bought 2 this year in Montgomery, and it's been good so far.
So I'm going to put a link. Y'all, I love your YouTube channel. I think people will check it out. You showed a kind of a vlog of both of those purchases where you walked through them and showed your whole journey on the plane from California there. So for people who are interested in seeing like the actual houses, I'll put a link to that in the show notes. But I just want to point out something that I hope a lot of people get from this. I'm just impressed by, and this is a compliment, by the way, the simplicity of the execution of your plan. Like I think it, you know, sometimes we, and I'm guilty of this as well. You start doing a good thing that works, and you're like, well, you know, I'm gonna go try this other thing that I heard on a podcast, and like I'm just impressed that you, from the very beginning, like from the debt snowball to the side hustles to the, you know, getting the HELOC and buying these properties, and you just identified some things that worked: single family house, turnkey. Get a good loan on it. Make sure the rent makes sense. Like, it was like just some core fundamentals. Yeah. And then you didn't try to like stray from that. You just said, let's just repeat that thing. And was that kind of approach of strategy, anything deliberate? I mean, I'm just wondering if how that kind of, because it's very obvious from my looking in on it, that was a core part of your success, was just sticking to those fundamentals.
Yeah, Chad, it's just, once again, I have to give kudos to my wife, you know, because, you see all these different, when you say real estate investing, that's such a broad term. I mean, you have wholesaling, you have fix and flip, you have so many strategies that we said, well, what strategy do we feel comfortable with? You know, what strategy is going to make us less stressed? And we just went from there. You know, like I said, my wife, she's a security seeker. She wants to take risks, but calculated risks. And this seemed, our strategy seemed very calculated, seemed very simple. We saw others that had been successful doing it. And so we said, you know, this, of all the things we see that you can kind of just have your head spinning as far as real estate investing, this seems like the most realistic for us. So it fit our personalities. And I think that that was key. And, you know, we may do some more, you know, get a property that maybe needs more work down the road. But I think in order to set yourself up for success, you need to start small. And that worked for us. And that gave us the confidence that we could do it again, similar to paying off your smallest debt. You know, man, I could pay off this $300 credit card. That means I could spawn that into more and bigger. And so I think just start off small worked well for us, and I'm sure it will work, you know, for others.
Yeah, and what people, I don't want to get the wrong idea about it either, is that when you start simple and you start small, there's a book that I really like called Building Wealth One House at a Time by John Schaub. So I don't know if you've checked that one out before, but I talk about it a lot on the podcast because it's like using exactly what y'all are doing right now. One or two deals a year, stable, keep on compounding. If you wake up 10 years later and you've got this little empire of properties that, you know, you can do a ton with 5 or 10 rental properties like that, that can be a game changer if that's what you want to do. Even two or three properties. I love that y'all are demonstrating that you shared all the details behind the scenes, how that works. And it's not just the real estate, it's the personal finance stuff, it's the communication with your spouse, like all of these things kind of work together. And you can just get a strategy that works for you. That was the key that I just heard there, is that you can't do what worked for Chad or for Marcus. Like, you got to find a strategy that works for you in your life. It takes a little bit of awareness, a little bit of thoughtfulness, communication to figure that one out.
Yeah, so true, Chad. I mean, we talk about it often that I could do exactly what Chad did, work, you know, verbatim. But the thing of it is Chad did it at this time.
Right.
You could do exactly what Marcus and Shira did. But Marcus and Shire bought a house in 2009, you know, that, you know, like, so it, you can't just carbon copy, you know, because you have to account for time, where the market is at this moment, where this is. And so you have to just kind of take principles from others and then implement it to your strategy. I'm a big believer in that. But trying to just do it exactly like that person, a lot of times it's going to cause frustration down the line. You'll be like, man, it's not working out. All right, it didn't work for me, you know. Right. Whereas if you were able to take the principles from Chad's story or the principles from Marcus's story, okay, now how does that, let me filter it into my life and my lifestyle. I think if people do that, they'll be more successful.
Well said. Yeah. And that, sometimes that's the part that you can't read in a book or get on a podcast. You know, you can get the principles, like the principles are there, the story's there. But like that translation, it's almost like translating it from English to Spanish, you know, like that, they're both there, but you gotta translate that to your life. Like, how's this going to work for Marcus? How's this going to work for Chad? And that takes a little bit of thoughtfulness, you know, takes some thinking, some trial and error, some experimentation like y'all did, but that's the key, right?
Absolutely. I totally agree with that. Very true.
So this has been awesome, Marcus. Really appreciate the details you're sharing and the example. I think a couple last questions. One is like, just, you know, where you are right now. Let's just talk about, like, you know, you've been on this journey financially, you know, paying off debt, and now you're building passive income streams and side hustles. Like, you know, what do you all, when you and Shira talk about the next 5 years, like what's down the road for you guys?
Well, we talk about it often, and we meet often to talk about the future. For us, we like to say lucky number 13. If we could get, you know, use this same strategy we've been using and get to our 13th property, we'll be able to decide if we want to continue working at our W-2 jobs, or we can, you know, kind of stop at that point. And really, we can use that cash flow from those properties to get us to the age where we're able to draw from our other investments, you know, retirement accounts, 401s and things like that. So we really have more options. And for me, and for Shira, that's what it's all about, is options. And so we're setting ourselves up now so that we can have options in the near future. And so that's kind of where we see ourselves, you know, rinse and repeat and trying to scale the real estate investing side until we can get to our 13th property. And for us, we're at the point now where it's starting to scale itself, where the cash flow from the homes that we have currently will pay for the next one, and so on and so forth. And so we're excited about that. So that's kind of our 5-year plan, I guess you could say.
It's a beautiful thing. When it starts snowballing like that, it's kind of like the debt snowball that y'all did on the debt. I mean, this income starts snowballing too. And so you get, wow, you know, what, $300 a month, $500 a month, and it turns, you get four of those and it turns into a couple thousand a month. And then all of a sudden you're like, hey, wait a minute, I got $20,000-$30,000 in the bank that didn't come from my job. You know, this stuff came from my, so then now you got down payment for the next property. So that's beautiful when that starts happening. And it's, I don't know, I mean, I'll be, you know, curious to follow along with your story, but I'm willing to bet that it's going to start accelerating. You know, the things, the success, you keep working that plan, the next step, and then the next step, you know, just follow that plan. It's going to go a lot faster as you learn more and you get more success, you get more knowledge in your head and more team around you, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Chad, that's the goal, man. And we hope that, like you said, hopefully it starts to accelerate faster, you know? So that's definitely the plan.
Well done. Well, I'm impressed. And just my final question, this is what I ask all our guests. This is a show about real estate investing, but also about financial independence. And people are going to be at all sorts of different stages of the journey to financial independence. But in particular, the people who are just kind of getting started, maybe they're still in debt, maybe they're, you know, just kind of looking for that first rental property. I'm wondering if you have any advice for them from a financial independence standpoint, any final tip you can give them that'll help them on their journey?
Yeah, I think a good piece of advice is to, one, if you haven't started, go ahead and get started wherever that is. That's you know, getting your first deal, real estate deal, or if that is you are wanting to, just whatever your goal is, you've done the research, go ahead and get started. You know, because there's some things that you can't read in a book. There's some things you can't, you know, hear in a podcast. Some things you'll learn as you go. And that's one thing that that I've realized, you know, throughout, you know, all the things that we've endeavored to do. Also, to stay consistent. There's this, my wife references this book, 3 Feet from Gold, or I believe it's 3 Feet from Gold, where it's, Foot from Gold, or but it speaks to someone mining for gold and mining and mining and getting tired and just quitting, and they were right there, you know. So I say just stay consistent, because you're closer than you think you are. Sometimes it doesn't feel like it. Sometimes it's like, man, that's, you know, when am I gonna get there? But stay consistent, and you'll definitely get there in the end.